What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Dr. Moshe Daniel Block. Moshe Daniel Block, ND, HMC, VDP, is the author of The Revolution of Naturopathic Medicine, Remaining True to Our Philosophy, a book about the philosophy and practice of naturopathic medicine, and Holistic Counseling, Introducing the V's Dialogue, a book about a breakthrough healing method uniting the world of mind-body medicine and psychology. He graduated from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in Toronto, Canada in 2000. Dr. Block then went on to complete the Homeopathic Master Clinician course with Lewis Klein, FSHOM, in 2003. He specializes in autoimmune illness and myasthenia gravis, a disease he was personally diagnosed as having and from which he has healed himself. He teaches the very wisdom and knowledge that helped him heal himself and others in his holistic counseling certification program for NDs. Let's get started. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Healing Intentions. This is your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti, and today I have a really special guest, Dr. Moshe Daniel Block. Welcome.
Thanks, Doc. It's great to be here. It's an honor.
Awesome. Yeah, we've had some awesome encounters over the years. I've taken a part of your holistic counseling course that you offer, something we'll talk in depth about. Learned a lot from you, from your book, and just, you know, from our friendship over the years and all the great information you've put out there. So thank you for everything that you've done for the profession and for myself, and really a big inspiration.
Thank you so much. It's an honor. And it's a privilege. It truly is. It's an honor to be able to share. And I appreciate the connection that we've had and will continue to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. Why don't we start out by just a quick introduction on yourself? How did you get into naturopathic medicine? Kind of what's your story from the beginning?
You know, the story, it has a bit of a dark beginnings. I was a very sick kid, you know, and I think we go into what you need. People go into psychology because they have serious emotional problems. I went into naturopathic medicine because, well, you know what? I wanted to help people to be healthy because I had suffered so much in my health. I had everything under, not everything, obviously, but it felt like everything under the sun, like a very long list of issues. I once tried out for a hockey team. It was a AAA team. It was the highest level in my area. And everybody knew that I was always sick. You know, I was a good player. I could have made that team, but when they, everyone was like, does anybody have any serious problems here? And everyone was like, Block, you know, they all pointed to me, all these players that knew I had issues. So they didn't draft me. They didn't pick me for the team because I had this history. So there's been suffering. There's been loss of stuff. And I wanted to help people. The reason why I chose naturopathic medicine and not conventional medicine, because naturopathic medicine, allegedly, that was the idea, had this balance between like science and rigor and the subtler forms of healing in nature, which I love because that's what I've identified myself as having, both those sides, the scientific, the very rational, and the more esoteric, the healing, the natural, you know, stuff. Mm-hmm. I say allegedly because it didn't fulfill its end of the bargain as much as I would like. I have to give it what it did. I learned homeopathy. I learned acupuncture. And I learned certain instructors that were beautiful embodiments of the medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I got nothing, nil, from my studies, which I graduated from in 2000. However, it wasn't as much. And since then, I would just think it's just cascaded of, you know, distancing itself from its roots.
Right.
Yeah. From that nice balance. Mm-hmm. There's always a room for science and rigor in our medicine. Always. I support it entirely. But if you have that very myopic and restrictive reductionistic model, so we have to emulate conventional medicine to be official or credible, that's a big mistake on our parts. Huge mistake.
Yeah, kind of going the way that the osteopathic doctors, right, the DOs, right, they to get the mainstream acceptance from the MDs, they kind of gave up their philosophies and, basically became the same thing as them with their education, right?
And there, and everyone, anyone who's paying attention these last few years can see that that whole system, which we have regarded as the authority of medicine, is completely unscientifically corrupted to the bone. The implementation of the measures that they've been doing during COVID are completely unscientific, fly in all of the face that even the most basic sciences recognize about immunity and the definitions of what, herd immunity means. They're just redefining things and willy-nilly throwing science out the window. So why would we want to identify as being like that system, which is completely gone astray and led people astray? We have to embody our medicine proudly and bravely, which we haven't seen a lot with the organizations, the organizations that lead our profession. They have chose cowardice and to kowtow to this agenda, which is very corrupted and false.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's something we'll get into a little bit more in detail. Just, the big title I would say is censorship, and why did hashtag natural immunity, for example, get censored on all the social media platforms, among many other things, but why didn't they want us to know about natural immunity?
Why are they erasing that? Why are they making that a dirty word? Something to be ashamed of, something to hide. It's, the word gaslighting is a strong word that is a very, it's a buzzword, right? But it's also very relevant. It's easy to get gaslighted by when the masses are identifying with a certain way of being. It's easy to get gaslighted by your peers when people are touting the same things without really thinking about what they're saying. It's easy to fall into that. So that's, I think that's one of the reasons why we have these kinds of podcasts, right? Where it's therapy for ourselves and for others to have a kind of a solidarity in recognizing, hey, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy because I think something weird's going on in COVID, in our profession, in all kinds of things, right? So that's why we do what we do, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you started or helped start or you did start the NDs for Truth website and got a lot of good information out over the last couple of years, uncensored, really quality information out there to people. And that's my
Thank you.
goal and purpose in this podcast is getting the truth out to people about many different topics that I'm passionate about, all these stigmatized topics of cannabis, psychedelics, and then just the truth about all this other stuff that, you might not hear on the mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I commend you on that. I think that that is not for everybody. Not, it doesn't appeal to everyone, but it certainly is a call for people to fill in the gaps because obviously the news outlets are failing us and they have been for a long time. COVID, I've always been aware of that, but never so much as in the last couple of years. I've turned over so many rocks that I didn't even think I had to turn over. Everything is up for scrutiny. Everything that we think we know in science, in our cosmology, in religious belief, in politics, everything has to be scrutinized and discerned, because it's all under an influence that is insidious, very covert. It has often a presentation of appearing very beneficial and very compassionate and very loving, but its ultimate purpose is to divide and conquer, is to disempower people, is to keep them ignorant, is to keep them sick and dependent on the system. Yeah.
Well said. Yeah. So kind of circling back to your started into the profession, then what led you into holistic counseling and kind of what's your path and all of that? How did all that get started?
That's a good question. You know, here's another thing I've noticed among myself and other practitioners as well, is that you kind of practice what you have experienced. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen some big doctors get sick. We all get sick. And they went the conventional route. Fine. You know, there's no judgment in that part, because I really think there is a room for heroic measures at the right time to save a life. I really just want to say that. Mm-hmm. So there's no judgment there, only to say that after they changed their attitude to medicine and started to become more conventional and start to plug conventional medicine more. So what we do, we kind of embrace as practitioners. What helped me heal, so 27, I always have to like up the ante when I talk about this. 27 years ago, I was diagnosed with myasthenia gravis. And what helped me heal was mind-body medicine, which was just simply a dialogue from the Options Institute called the Optiva Dialogue. And it's a simple process of asking questions to get the person to answer and reflect deeper, to get deeper and deeper into the subconscious, to recognize what you're really thinking. Mm-hmm. Because we all are, ideally, if you're mindful, you could see what you're thinking. But there's subconscious processes which become shrouded in darkness. They're shrouded in the darkness of the deep subconscious and the subconscious. So this process that I went through enabled me to see this core belief that I had, and to change that belief spontaneously. I saw through it, and I had this spontaneous, powerful healing process of this autoimmune disease. I was healed on the spot. And that changed me forever. I can never forget that personal experience of healing that I had. So I wanted to help people that way. And so through the last 22 years of practice, I have been adapting it for naturopathic practice for different forms of pathology. I've been enhancing it, let's say improving it, bringing it to levels that I feel are necessary to address the different kinds of cases that we have. And I've always kind of been that sort of a person where I take something, a really brilliant thing, and I look at it and I like to enhance it. I like to tweak it and maybe make some improvements. I did that with games when I was a kid. I made my own rules. You know, I was like, this is going to make it more fun. So this is just part of my personality to want to bring something forward. And that's what I did with holistic counseling. I brought it forward from this brilliant thing generated by Barry Neal Kaufman at the Option Institute. And that's what I teach in my program, holistic counseling.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And I know you have like a certification program, you know, with that alongside the holistic counseling. And that's something I have a couple of good friends and colleagues that are doing that right now. And you have something coming up as well. Might as well share a little bit about that right now, since we're talking about it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Let me just show people how to get there. I'll share my screen here. Mm-hmm. So basically, the website is holistic with no W, 1L - counseling with 1L. That's the one that has 1L .ca. And, you know, here you could click on events. You could read about the program. There's some really fun videos about it. There's lots of good, the four-step process. So step one is the foundations course. Step two is the online course. Step three is the advanced course. Mm-hmm. And step four is the one-on-one. There's two categories. There's physician heal thyself, where I help a person go really deep into their own process for understanding what causes their suffering and empowering themselves. That is crucial in this program, because with that, then they can move into the mentoring, the stuff that where they'll become the practitioner. Mm-hmm. And that is where you can apply that in practice is the dialogue process. what I've noticed with practitioners when I'm mentoring them, so that's the second half, is I mentor you. It's kind of like taking your hand and walking you through this one-on-one of say, oh, you could have asked this, what stopped you from asking that? And we really look at this process of how your dialogue is doing. We call it the Vis dialogue, right? The healing power of nature dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very, the whole package of the program really works well. It's very life transforming. And what I've noticed with practitioners is when they have not unlocked some movement in their own personal issues, they are ineffective in practice in this holistic model. You know, there's other models to practice, let's say the allopathic model, where it's just your mind, that your knowledge that you are giving externally to the patient's own vital energy that is makes up the medicine. But when you're doing holistic medicine, that is, you're right in the energy field of that person. Mm-hmm. And the healing is coming through them, then our ego has to be in a state of flow. And it's not in a state of flow when our personal issues are at play during the dialogue. Am I going to get this? Am I good enough? Do I have to prove myself here that I am a doctor? All these different issues that are at play. So that's what the healing part of this program is about. So a practitioner could come and for very deep personal transformation, as well as learning a very, very powerful, I'd say one of the best forms of counseling around. And I will stand by that. I will stand by that because people that are trained, it's not just me now, I'm able to convey this to people through this program. It's not just me that's able to get these results. Practitioners, even during the process, when they're still, they haven't even been certified yet, are saying, oh my gosh, we just had a life-changing experience with my patient. And they said, this is more effective than any counseling I've ever done. So it is something that I'm conveying to people through the program. Mm-hmm. So the next program starts in, you could come up here, you could go to events. Click on events, and the next program starts this coming October, and it's going to be in person again. So October 28th to the 30th is the beginning of the program, the Foundations course, in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains of East Tennessee, in a gorgeous retreat called the Doe River Gorge. Mm. And the meals and the dwelling are included in the price of the program. For the beginning, so the Foundations part one, and for the advanced course, those are the in-person ones. Everything else is online. Mm-hmm. All right. So that gives you a little bit of a spiel. Thank you for that. Awesome. And I really would love to have people take this program that are really interested. They, you know, one of the calls to this program is that I've been doing this medicine and I'm not really inspired by it much anymore. Like, I know there's more to it than this. I want to go deep with people. And this program really helps you do that. Really mm-hmm. helps you.
Not only deep with the people that you work with your patients, but also within yourself, right? The whole physician heal thyself aspect of this all, which I learned from you, which I think is so important. And I've seen that in my own, you know, work and just with others of, you can only go as deep with somebody as far as you've gone deep within yourself. And I've seen that over and over again in my life. So kudos exactly. to you for that.
Yeah. Thank you. It's so, so true. And it's even true in an ongoing way. Like you start, let's say you start, you take your first step as a practitioner and you have a certain patient type that's coming to you. And of course they're all different, but you're challenged by that because you're new. And things are new and you lack experience, and then you start to grow in experience, you start to deepen yourself. And ideally through the holistic model, you're also healing yourself. Mm-hmm. And as you do so, you then call in, I call it the great orchestrator. It's the listening ear of God who listens into where you are as a practitioner, how ready you are for the tougher case. Mm. So then you become ready for the tougher case. Then you get a tougher case. So now you have more experience and you're more equipped to help, but now you're working with a tougher case. So you're still at that level of always learning and growing through difficulty in practice. Mm-hmm. And there's always this ongoing growth and invitation to deepening oneself in the process of working and helping others.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that sounds right up my alley. You might be seeing me here in Tennessee here shortly.
Good, good.
So how do you explain, just for the general public that's not, you know, a practitioner, how do you explain the mind-body connection and kind of go through that little waterfall, you know, image from your
book? Yeah.
That's really good, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure. I could even bring up the waterfall. Let me do a quick search if I could bring it up on my my thingy here. I had
a really good image.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I had a student, let me see, waterfall. I'm not sure. Maybe it's this. Oh yeah, this will do. This will do. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I have some I have some like promotional material. This is one of my promo things, but this should do the trick. Now, where is it? Where did that go? Okay, here we go. So I'll share here. This is it. Okay. So just forget about this promotional stuff, but basically we have a waterfall here. Mm-hmm. The idea is that the soul is the highest aspect of the self. It's the deepest aspect of the self. It's the foundation of the self. And everything that is emanates from that. It's from the soul level. We could say it's pure consciousness. It's the I am. And that supplies energy to the mind. The mind is born from within that I am. And when the mind is in a place of allowing itself to live in harmony with the true nature of the I am, it's like this side of the waterfall where there's just a state of flow. And the emotions will then flow in conjunction with, in harmony with the mind, which is at peace, and it flow with the I am. And then the body is benefited as well. These are the different bodies that we inhabit. Mm-hmm. So we're not just a physical body. We're also an emotional body. We have a mental body. And then we have a higher mind as well. And then there's something called the causal body, which I don't show in this diagram, but we actually inhabit five different bodies. And this is also consistent in the teaching of yoga, the Vedic knowledge, the five sheaths. Mm-hmm. And these can be summarized as the physical body, the subtle body, and then the causal body. So all this to say, when a thought enters the mind that is not in harmony, you know, we were given free will. We could do whatever the heck we want with this life that we have. Mm-hmm. We could think whatever we want. We could identify with whatever we want. When we identify with something that counters the I am, that resists its natural state, which is okay, I am that I am, and that is good, basically. Mm-hmm. It's not a defined good. It's just a state of harmony and peace. When we identify with something as false, like I am nothing without money, let's say I use that as an example because I've just had that recently in my practice, and I've seen that a few times, or I am not good enough. That's a very common belief that the mind starts to identify. I'm not good enough, and that's why my parents are not loving me. So funny enough, our parents are wounded because their parents were wounded because their parents were wounded. And we get that wound too. When a child is faced with the lack of love from their parents, the child is in a place of love because they're in a place of innocence towards their parents, and they're naive. They haven't grown up to understand the reality of the world. So they tend to do the only thing they can do to justify why the parents aren't loving them unconditionally. And that is they make it about themselves. It's because I'm not good enough. That's why they're not loving me. I am not good enough. Mm-hmm. So in a state of innocence, the mind starts to identify with an answer to just try to justify this painful existence of not having love as that child is entitled to. Mm-hmm. So there enters in the belief, I'm not good enough. That's false. It's not true. It's an illusion. It's a choice that the person is choosing to identify with, which is false. And because they're doing that, and it interferes with that natural state of flow in the waterfall. So that the emotion will thereby mirror the belief by feeling not good enough. So the thought is I'm not good enough. The feeling is I'm not good enough. Probably the second and third chakra, maybe the fourth chakra gets blocked. The flow of chi results is blocked. Mm-hmm. And in the, you know, the three treasures in Chinese medicine establishes that the Shen governs the mind. Sorry, the Shen governs the chi, which governs the blood. Mm-hmm. So the Shen is like the mind in this model. And when the mind is governing the flow of chi, i.e. I don't feel good enough, then the chi is going to block, and then the blood will block its flow, and then the body will get sick. Mm-hmm. But illness begins with the thought. It starts right there. That's where illness begins. Dis-ease, right? We say dis-ease. So that's the metaphor. That's the metaphor for the holistic model for mind-body medicine. This is what how I define mind-body medicine. That literally mind precedes body. The body is a faithful puppy dog for the mind. The body is in a state of passive reflection for the mind and will reflect what is going on in the mind. And there are some nuances and some balances that we could bring to that. You know, toxicity will influence it, and that could influence the brain, which mm-hmm. then influences the mind, sure. Mm-hmm. But generally in chronic illness, this is the model. This is how we really help people. By not getting bogged down into the shoving around of boulders in the level of the body, because the body is only reflecting to responding to what the mind is at, where the mind is at. Mm-hmm. Buddha said, everything is mind. And that's true within the context of this level of reality, mind, emotions, body, everything is mind. Body is mind, emotions is mind, and mind is mind, of course. Mm-hmm. But there is something beyond the mind, and that is the pure consciousness that is beyond the mind. Mm-hmm. When somebody is enlightened, they are experiencing their true nature, and their mind has come to stillness. Mm-hmm. Like our mind is often very busy, and that leads to stress, you know? The more right. we have busyness of the mind, the more it leads to stress, and that influences the rest of the body. So I think that's probably good for now with that metaphor. I love that metaphor. I recently was requested for someone to put it on their website. Someone who's been trained in holistic counseling. So it's a popular one for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a great depiction of the mind-body connection. I would say definitely thank you for that. And so would you say earlier, you said your ego is not in a state of flow. Would you say that that's like that flow that's broken up there, is that the ego at the top, the mind, all of that's just not flowing down? And so that's why the practitioner is not able to go as deep within people, is that they're blocked. And so they're, you know, having issues blocked with, you know, helping people with their flow. Is that how you would kind of describe that?
I would describe that for sure in that way. I'd also describe it as kind of resonant frequency. So in sympathetic, in the law of sympathetic vibratory physics, we know that if you hit one tuning fork, let's say at A 440, you know, I'm not tuning solfeggio style right now. And you have another one that's not too far away, it will resonate just from hitting the one. The other one will resonate. Mm-hmm. So if a patient comes in and they have anger issues, or they have sadness issues, or they're afraid to be themselves or whatever, and that practitioner has that same fear and they're not comfortable with it, that's the difference. We don't have to be perfect mm-hmm. as practitioners. But we have to be comfortable with our issues in order to help others with their similar issues, mm-hmm. right? So somebody's coming in, they have this big load of sadness. And if you're not okay with your sadness, then you by default will resist that sadness. And that gives the subconscious and very subtle, yet very strong message to the patient, don't go there. That's not okay. Your sadness is not okay with me. So we're not going to deal with that. And a lot of it's sad because the great orchestrator that I was talking about before, you know, the listening ear of God tends to bring practitioner and patient together because they have like issues. This is the weird thing, you know. It's uncanny a lot of the time how similar the patients are that nature, God, the divine brings to us to work with. And so we have to be working on our issues, or we're going to just be like constantly like battling, not going there with people.
Makes a lot of sense. Perfect. And, you know, it reminds me of kind of similar with your story. You had an autoimmune disease and you were able to heal that. And I remember in your book, you talk a lot about why would the body attack itself? You know, like why is that happening? And in autoimmune disease, you see this big connection there with people and their, you know, like thoughts that they have about themselves and, you know, disharmonious thoughts and that connection there. Have you talk about that a little bit more and, you know, how, what you've seen and maybe some patient cases, examples of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, in my case, it was like the belief was I needed to be perfect. And the self-inflicted punishment of non-perfection, which was I was the judge, jury, and executioner, was to beat myself up. You know, that internal stupid. Or come on, man, like what's the matter with you? Like that kind of anger towards the self, which then informs, and this is another way of looking at mind body medicine. What's the mind doing? It's saying stupid, saying you asshole. Like what's wrong with you, you asshole. So then the cells go of the immune system go, hey, the boss is beating him/herself up, in this case himself. So they're like, all right, we're in the business of attacking the self. Because the immune cells is one example of a part of the body that can turn against itself, right? There's not a lot of other things that can really do this attack thing that as well as the immune system can. So in my practice, I will find this with just about every case, some form of anger, hatred attacking the self that results in the immune system reflecting that. The mind precedes the body. The body reflects the mind. And I mean, I can give you an example. I had a case of a woman who was very sick, and she wasn't very forthcoming in sharing stuff with me. So it's like the third appointment. We hadn't had much results. And she picked up the phone. She didn't have the internet at the time. She was like, one sec, I gotta go take my Mestinon. I gotta take my medicine. I haven't taken it. I'm having trouble breathing. I said, just wait. Don't take it yet. It's, you know, I don't want her to suffer, but it provides an opportunity. Because when the drugs come in and they take away the symptoms, then the suffering is alleviated externally. And the person is like, oh, I'm good now. I don't have to deal with this stuff. But there's a kind of a pressure and desperation that comes through the symptoms that is positive and that we want. We don't want our patients to suffer, but that suffering that results from their condition is a good thing because it pushes them to look for answers.
Right.
Ideally in the right direction. So I told her to wait, don't take your Mestinon yet. And that day she revealed to me that the myasthenia gravis started right after her ex-boyfriend died. And the story was that he was in a gang. She loved him, you know, and she said, I will leave you if you don't leave the gang, because she was worried for his well-being, and rightly so. So he wouldn't. She left him, and then he got killed, and she blamed herself. And she had all this emotion about it. It was an amazing appointment whereby she got to witness her being very hard on herself, attacking herself for leaving him because he died, even though it was not her responsibility. So that was her quote unquote error. And that's what she saw. And she cried. And she had never told this to me before that appointment. And then her breathing was fine after. And I said, how are you breathing? She was like, oh, yeah, it's okay. So she had released that heavy emotion that was turning against herself that her body was reflecting. So it's a beautiful example of a case that resolved because of, her realizing that and realizing that she didn't need to do that to herself. Right. So that's a good example of that. Yeah, I think I answered your question. Did I answer your question about
it? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's countless, numerous examples you have of, you know, people are doing the right diet, they're doing the exercise, they're taking the supplements, they're doing all the right stuff, and they're still not getting better. And then once they get down to those, you know, limiting beliefs that they have about themselves and choose to stop believing them, all of a sudden, miracles can happen. And I'm sure you've just seen that so many times that it's just not even as miraculous to you anymore. It's like, oh yeah, another day, you know, in the office.
No. It's always miraculous. Always. It's always beautiful. It's always awe-inspiring. It's the thing that I think is the magic that makes this practice so beautiful. I don't think it'll ever become humdrum. Never. Because it is really, you're witnessing, like, it's the glory of the healing power of nature. It's the glory of true healing at work. When practitioners of naturopathic medicine pay lip service to the idea that, you know, I don't heal you, you heal you, the healing power of nature heals you. It's really right on the edge of that you're witness to. And that's a beautiful thing. It's always going to be inspiring.
I believe it. Do you ever have the urge to just kind of give people the answers when you see it so glaring, you know, in front of them, instead of allowing them to come up on their own with the answer? Do you ever have the urge to just be like, just, you know? And that's kind of the difference between what you do and a lot of other types of therapy and counseling, right?
Yes, I do have the urge, and sometimes I do. And when I do, it's because I'm in my ego, because I'm struggling with an issue. I'm not feeling very good about myself. And so in projection of my ego's need to be affirmed in some way, I want to give the answer. I want to make myself feel good as a practitioner. So I have learned, you know, through the years of practice, I've gotten better at not, even if I desire to do that, I will, as much as I can, not do that and be patient. And then I'm healed in as a result of working through the surrender of the ego, not through the edification of the ego. Because as practitioners, it's easy to be sitting in that place of importance of doctor. You know, somebody's coming to see you, you're in this place of privilege, you can give them advice, they're going to listen to you. And a lot of people want to listen to you. They want to defer to what you have to tell them rather than the inherent wisdom that lives in them, which is the basis of the holistic model. The understanding, the conviction that the wisdom of truth and nature and the divine lives inside of the individual. That's what we're working with. So the knowledge that comes from me, I have lots of knowledge that I could give. And that would, if I desire that, that's an edification of my ego, right? That's some kind of compensatory mechanism for me ultimately not feeling good about myself, which is a falsehood and a forgetting that of who I really am, which is that I am that divine consciousness. So it's interesting. It goes full circle there. As I embody and I know who I am, it enables me to totally trust in the knowledge and the wisdom living inside of that person. And therefore, it inspires me to want them to see that for themselves and not to just give the answer. So the training in holistic counseling is to really, really, I don't, for lack of a better expression, hammer that home. Hammer that home, that's what's going to really serve people. In some instances, my experience has taught me that it's okay to give a little bit of a tidbit here. I'm going to give a tidbit. You know, give a little tidbit at the right time, but not to change that dynamic, because it's very easy for patients to defer to the doctor. And when they defer, it's a very different, it's the change in momentum can happen with one thing that the doctor says. Mm-hmm. So you'll be asking questions and the patient will be something like this. And they're looking within, you could tell they're considering it. And then you say something like, you know, right? And then they're like, oh yeah, okay, tell me, you know? Uh-huh. They've just transferred power from themselves to you, the practitioner. And it's very easy to fall into that. So we try not to. We definitely try not to.
Makes sense. Perfect sense. Okay, cool. So switching gears a little bit, just more high level, you know, naturopathic medicine, there seems to be like different ways that people practice and what we're taught. And obviously we're big supporters and believers of the vitalist, you know, paradigm. Talk a little bit about that a little bit more and what vitalism means to you and why vitalism and how that's different than, you know, green allopathy and all of that.
Sure. Well, there's obviously even categories of vitalism and there's depths of vitalism. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, a vitalist acknowledges that there is a vital energy that dwells in the body. Mm-hmm. And by accessing that vitalist energy, that vitalism, we heal the body at a deeper level than at the molecules with supplements and drugs and stuff like that. Right. So a vitalist ideally identifies with this vital energy, could call it chi, ki, prana, life force, you name it. Now, I find that the body of vitalism is held in a lower level than what the mind-body connection brings it. So mind-body medicine is very vitalistic. In fact, it powerfully releases the vital force to resolve imbalance and unhealth in the body when the core issue that altered the vital force is released. And that core issue is in the mind. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, there are exceptions, but most of the time it's in the mind. So vitalists, the status of the vitalist, the where vitalists are in general now tends to be working at levels that doesn't acknowledge this. And therefore they are not employing the use of the vital force to the degree that it can be. Mm-hmm. However, if we compare the allopathic approach of like, this is your disease and we got to remove the symptoms of your disease through whatever means, supplements or drugs or surgery or whatever, the vitalistic approach is much deeper. Vitalists acknowledge the beauty of homeopathy and acupuncture and using hydrotherapy to stimulate the vital force so that the vital force heals the body. Mm-hmm. And all of that is really beautiful. And any knowledge that we have as naturopathic doctors or other practitioners is helpful in certain cases where we can't offer or the solution doesn't lie right at the mind-body level. Mm-hmm. The mind level, because there are some cases where the person's vital force is so low, they're so bogged down by their disease, they're so depressed, they're so manic or whatever, that the subtlety of that we need to get into and with the questions, mm-hmm. it's like a jungle and we can't go there yet. Mm-hmm. So it's really excellent to have at our fingertips, these tools, the vitalistic tools that are what I would consider the traditional and true form of naturopathic medicine. What distinguishes naturopathic medicine from conventional medicine is this understanding of vital energy, of the vital force, and how to stimulate that, how to help a patient heal. You know, Dr. Jim Sensenig, mm-hmm. was a great leader in the vitalistic, basically the founder of the Naturopathic Medicine Institute, along with the other practitioners and teachers that have taking up that mantle. Mm-hmm. And he was all about Linlar 101. And it's all like, you can do so much by helping a person detoxify, give them good nourishment, which includes rest and water.
Right.
Right. And then stimulate the vital force. That's it. That's Linlar 101. And that's traditional naturopathy. And we could really go very, very far with that.
Yep.
Because I believe and I embody the idea that we're here for a reason, and that reason is our evolution to return to or acknowledge who we really are, and then to make our world around us a reflection of that, then I feel it's important as a practitioner that I address the vital force at the level of the mind, because it's at the mind where we make our choices. And it's, if a person is sick, it means that their evolutionary process is being focused in that, through that illness, to resolve something. Mm-hmm. I don't want to help that resolve without them understanding what caused it in the first place. So I feel like we're missing out on something if we're just helping resolve illness at the vital level, even if it's at the vital level, not the allopathic level.
Right.
If they don't understand deeply how their illness has manifested around their false choice about their reality, about themselves, about who they are. Mm-hmm. So this is the distinction in application of vital energy, right? The vital force. That's all I have to say about that in this moment.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, it's like as NDs, as naturopathic doctors, one of our principles is getting to the root cause. And it's
exactly,
like, you know, a lot of vitalism is getting to maybe some roots, you know, the top layer of roots, but what is the true root cause? Oftentimes, as you said, it's that mental, the mind, the mental, emotional, you know, spiritual, way deeper things that a lot of practitioners, I guess, just aren't well prepared to go into those depths, you know, and it's not necessarily their faults. We haven't been taught that in school.
Right.
You know? And so that's why your program really makes a lot of sense as like, hey, you really want to go to these depths, then I don't know any better source than learning from somebody like you. So makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Thank you. Absolutely. We also, the mind is a very, it's like a scary place to go in practice, because it's such a powerful space to be in. And there's so much going on in the mind. Mm-hmm. My program, the process of learning holistic counseling, helps to demystify a lot of that. The mind will ever remain a mystery. But with the experience I've had in working with through the mind, you gain more confidence to walk into that realm with your patient. Whereas like, if you haven't looked at your own self and your own issues and dived into it and come to some understanding, then going into that realm is very overwhelming for a practitioner, right? It's very, it's intimidating.
Yep.
So the mind is really like, we don't give this enough time and energy. It begs like years and years of kind of addressing the mind because of its power and because of its potential in healing. There's this Israeli healer. I think his name is something Kaufman, Svi Kaufman, I think it is. His, mm-hmm. The title of his book is "The Mind is the Healer, the Mind is the Killer." Mm. The mind is that which creates illness and kills us. And the mind is that which is involved in healing that illness and healing us.
Yep.
I really think it's vital that we start to really delve into the aspects of the mind, because it's a beautiful treasure trove, and it's also a landmine. There's a lot of landmines in the mind. There's a lot of stuff there, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. So switching gears a little bit. I know one of your topics that you love to talk about, alchemy. What is alchemy, and how does that kind of fit into everything that we're talking about here?
Well, I've always had this dream of alchemy, the philosophy, the way to look at nature through the alchemical lens. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted that to be a part of naturopathic medicine. You know, Theophrastus von Bastus von Hohenheim, aka Paracelsus, we acknowledge him as a forebear in naturopathic medicine. He understood in the 15th century the law of the Hahnemannian.
Similars?
Thank you. That's the law of similars. He understood the law of similars. He knew that principle. He was incredible with the use of plants. But what we don't know about Paracelsus in naturopathic medicine is he is heralded to this day and deeply studied and embraced by the alchemists of today. Mm. His alchemy was brilliant and deep, and his writings on alchemy are incredible, plus his cosmology of understanding the planets and the Old Testament. Like he gave treatises on all of these topics. When we look at alchemy, I feel like alchemy is a kind of a science and an art that unifies a lot of the different aspects that I have always loved: astrology, the study of the stars, the zodiac signs, the influences of planets. Those planets have influence on plants that we can take, and the animals that we can take homeopathically, herbally. You know, obviously herbal medicine, there's these things called rulerships. So the sun rules rosemary. It rules dandelion. What is the sun's rulership? What is its rulership in our own personal chart through our astrological sun? Or literally where do we have Leo? Leo is ruled by the sun. In alchemy, there's a principle that the symbol, the zodiac sign, the ruling planet, the ruling animal, they're all, you could understand them as one big family. And that way we understand the similarities through them. So what rules the sun in alchemy is gold. What is the symbol of gold? It's the zero with the dot in the middle. Well, that just so happens to be the symbol of the sun in the zodiac. That's where your sun is. It's this where you have this planet, this luminary, the sun, ruling you. So if you have an issue with your sun, you have an issue with self-confidence, with identity, and also influences the third chakra. So alchemy has this potential to really teach us just a way of viewing the world through nature that is expansive and beyond just the regular science that we have. That's one aspect of alchemy. Alchemy also deals with the transmutation of substance. So there's internal alchemy, which I think is beautiful, and there's also lab work alchemy. And I'm a both kind of person. I don't believe that alchemy was just meant to just be practiced internally, and the lab things are only metaphorical for what's happening within the person. I think that the alchemist's substance is a reflection of him or herself. And as they grow, just like in practice, you know, you grow and you get these tougher cases. Well, as you grow in understanding nature and creation, your substance that you create grows with you until the ultimate goal of the magnum opus, that is the philosopher's stone, which is not just a creation of J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter.
Right.
Funny, she used the name that Dumbledore got the Philosopher's Stone from Nicholas Flamel, who is a true historic alchemist.
Wow.
Who was a master. He was an adept who allegedly had the Philosopher's Stone as well. So The Philosopher's Stone. That's a big part of alchemy, but it's not, it's like, that's not the goal. That's the trap of the ego of the alchemist. The Philosopher's Stone, it's a path to the divine. Mm-hmm. That gold is in its crude form is not what we're after. We're not after gold. Gold is a means to an end. That's all that the alchemist sees gold. Gold, it's what lives inside the gold. Mm. And there was an alchemist called Philalethes, who is also a part of the member of the Royal Society. I'm forgetting his common name now. Anyway, he had a book called The Opening the Shut Opening the Doors of the Shut Palace of the King. Mm. So what is the king? The king is gold. The palace is shut because gold is shut in this physical world. But inside of the gold lives what we might could consider the philosophical gold or the sulfur of gold. Mm. And that sulfur of gold is what the philosopher, the alchemist is after, is opening up that. And does that exist also in the self? Yes, it does. It does. It's consciousness. It does. Opening up consciousness, right? So, I mean, I rarely talk about this, Adrian. I could talk about it for a long time. I don't know if you want me to keep going, if you want to ask me anything about that. I could just tell you one other thing. I'll tell you one other thing, and then we could go wherever you want. Mm-hmm. So the Philosopher's Stone, one way that you know you have the stone is one of the tests is that you can transmute base metals into gold. Mm-hmm. So the metaphor here is very powerful in that in the earth, metals grow from the substance, which is called the mother of metals, or we could say GUR, G-U-R. And when the climate or the earth is conducive and has all the pure elements to build the metals evolve through this what's called the golden chain of Homer to gold. They actually become gold. All metals in their evolutionary process result in the formation of gold. This is alchemical philosophy. You're not going to learn this in metallurgy in an engineering program at a university.
Right.
But this is alchemical philosophy. When the soil is sick or there's some poisonous corruption in it, then the metals get locked up in their evolutionary process. Mm. And they get stuck where they are. So lead will result. Lead is a sick form of gold. It's an unevolved form of gold, and mercury as well. Mm. And then silver is one step before gold. Silver is actually almost gold, we could say. So when you have the Philosopher's Stone, it's actually a universal medicine, or it's a medicine of metals, that it highly evolves. It corrects that corruption in the metal that stopped its evolution to gold. So it removes the corruption, it flashes it out, and thus transmutes it before our eyes into gold. So that's alchemy. You know, it's the practitioner, if they're worth their salt, and that's an important pun in alchemy.
Right.
If they're worth their salt, a true philosopher of alchemy it doesn't care about the gold, crude gold. They care about their own evolutionary process, just like the metals that get stuck. So do we humans get stuck in our evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Wow. And so is that why people would ingest monoatomic gold? Is that kind of they're trying to speed that process up in a way?
Yeah, they are. Monoatomic gold is, it is a kind of elevated philosophical gold. Mm-hmm. And it is for consciousness, and it's nootropic, just like gold in nano form, like the gold that you could eat, potable gold. You could mm-hmm. eat gold in nano form. It's digestible and it's absorbable. Mm-hmm. So yes, but that's not exactly the same as a philosophically philosophical goal. It's okay. Not the same. It shows you there's so many things that we don't know, right? Okay. Also about water. There's so many things about water we don't know, that it's just these depths. Gold is another example of that. Within it, its parameters, there is so much potential.
Yeah. Perfect segue into water. That was my next question about.
Yeah, sure. We'll leave alchemy. Goodbye, alchemy. We'll come back another time.
That's all for now with alchemy. I really don't know much about it. I just wanted you to talk about it. And I know that you could talk for days about it. And it's fascinating.
Sure.
Definitely a topic I'll get into, I'm sure, at some point. But yeah, so water, very, very, you think, oh, it's simple, H2O. Oh, no. It's way beyond that. So what is your knowledge, experience with the hydrogen therapy, hydrogen gas, water, and the Brown's gas, you know, whatever you call it, but how do you talk about that?
Well, I talk about it with great, great joy and great passion and love. I mean, when you split water into its two constituents, there's way more than its two constituents, first of all. Mm-hmm. But let's just look at it for the moment. You have this covalent bond between the hydrogen and the oxygen, that the electricity that we're putting into it with the Brown's gas machine or electrolysis of water, it's splitting this. So you're putting energy and you're splitting it. So there's this positive and negative that's influencing the water, right? At the positive side, I think you're going to get, I'm sorry if I'm backwardsing this, but you're going to get your oxygen gas, and that the negative, you're going to get your hydrogen gas.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if that's opposite. I mean, maybe it does in some sense, but so we have the plus and the minus, the yin and the yang of water, which is an element. Mm-hmm. Everything that is created is made up of a balance of opposites, everything. Mm-hmm. And so we have this, we need positive and negative electricity to liberate water into this very therapeutic gas that we breathe in as hydrogen at 66.6667% and 33.33% is oxygen. Mm-hmm. So oxygen we know is very beneficial for health, but we haven't really looked that much at what the hydrogen is good for. Mm-hmm. And the hydrogen is, you know, one of my mentors in this is Wiseman. George Wiseman. Mm-hmm. And I say it wise man because he's a wise man. He's really advancing this technology. And the hydrogen, he literally says that as we age, we dehydrate. I think even a conventional medical doctor will agree with that.
Yep.
You know, your tissues dehydrate. You become a little shriveled up. You shrink. This is the aging process.
Right.
So what is dehydration? What George Wiseman says is literally this loss of hydrogen, our ability to store hydrogen or our synthesis from food, something is lost in the process. And by inhaling hydrogen, you can rehydrate at a very deep level, as well as drinking hydrogen rich water, mm-hmm. which doesn't store very well. So don't bother going to the store and trying to buy a bottle of hydrogen water, because right. After a few hours, it's gone. Yeah. And even if you store it in a very fancy, high-tech, expensive vessel, maybe you double or triple that shelf life. So right. Hydrogen, I'm sorry, companies that supply hydrogen water, yeah, it's better to get it fresh right from the vine, right?
Yep.
So now here's what I was getting at with the positive and negative. In any system that has positive and negative, you get the balance of the two. Mm-hmm. So we always look at things in dualistic and polarity, but what about the unity of the two? Mm-hmm. So in the middle of every pole of positive and negative, you have this neutral balance. And that's what George Wiseman refers to as electrically expanded water. Mm-hmm. It's another phase of water. It is, I call it, the magnetic neutral water. It is the magic, I think, in it. So hydrogen is great, oxygen is great, but it's this altered form of water, which is neither gas nor solid nor liquid. And it is, it's not, it's kind of plasma. It's an expanded form of water. It's water, but it's not in, in any of those realms that we're used to. Mm-hmm. And that is highly charged, highly energetic, and highly hydrating.
Right.
And it's energizing. Like when I don't do my Brown's gas for a while and then I sit down and I inhale, I'm just like, I can feel all my cells are that much more alive. So there's, there is something that's very special about it. And what I love about it, I love simple things. I love inexpensive things. I love the idea that you can take a little bit of electricity. You don't need a lot of wattage to split water. If you want to get a lot of gas, you start to need more. But when you know how to engineer that, like with a lot of plates and how to space the plates, you need less power to split the water. And then you can hydrate yourself. And it's very healing as well for certain conditions. I think there's a lot to discuss about this, things we don't know about water, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's something that, I know, Gerald Pollack talks about with the fourth phase of water. He has a whole book on that and everything. I believe that's the same thing or very similar, that matrixed kind of a gel. And that's the way that the water is in our body. So when we consume it, it's able to just like instantly hydrate us. And then that hydrogen is the most powerful antioxidant on the planet. And so, I mean, you know, right, it's able to get directly into the nucleus of our cells. So it's just like such a powerful therapy. And the fact that it's not everywhere yet, it's just, you know, it's amazing. But I think that's why it's important to be talked about.
Right. And people can seek out their own knowledge. If they're do-it-yourselfers, they can build their own machine. George Wiseman on his website, Eagle Research, has a very good resource to build your own unit. I built my own first two units and then I bought a unit from him. And by the way, I'm a distributor. I get a little bit of for a sale, and I can also get a I can also get a discount for somebody if they use the code Dr. Moshe Aqua. If that doesn't work, it's Aqua Dr. Moshe. I think it's Dr. D-R-M-O-S-H-E-A-Q-U-A, Aqua, like that. Uh-huh. And then you can get a discount on this very beautiful machine. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot more that you could do with hydrogen technology. You can burn it for fuel, to power a car. For heating and to use a torch. So people are using hydrogen gas to weld. And there's this little stuff that's pure water that forms when you're welding or when you're burning the hydrogen oxygen blend, that the water, when you light it on fire, that hydrogen oxygen come and they form water again. And it's referred to as new water. Oh. And new water has mind-boggling properties that Wiseman talks a little bit about and other people talk a little bit about. It forms very slowly when you're using a torch. And if you can collect that water, basically what you have in your hands is pure potentiality, very, very high energy, pure potentiality. Wow. So I've seen people say you have electric charge, tell the water. And then if you touch it, zap, you get zapped by the water. You are like gasoline. They could light the water on fire.
Wow.
I'll tell you one story that I heard through George Wiseman's telling the story, that there was a company, these gentlemen were selling minerals, life minerals, like from the sea, right? That we offer our patients for remineralization. So they had a product that had 30 minerals in it and they had it up on a shelf. And then they made their, they were making new water. They didn't know what they had. They just had like a liter of it that they had made from welding or something like this. They put it up on a shelf and their mineral bottle was on the shelf as well. And the sun was shining through the mineral water into the new water. What happened was some crud started to form in it and made this like crud in the bottom. They're like, what is this? Let's just for shits and giggles analyze this. They analyzed it. It was all 30 minerals from their product.
Wow.
The sunlight had brought the information of these minerals into the water, and it had physically manifested those minerals.
Wow. That's amazing.
It is. It is amazing. And I think I would like to see naturopathic doctors be on the cutting edge of this kind of research.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, interesting research.
Yeah. I would love that. Yeah. I would love that also. Wow. That's got my wheels turning there. Cool.
Right? Right? I know. Me too. Me too. I haven't played that enough at all. Actually, I haven't played at all with new water. It's something I want to do.
Well, awesome. Beautiful. I'm actually at the Vital Gathering in Scottsdale. Gerald Pollack is going to be there talking about the fourth phase of water. So I want to bring this up to him and see what he says.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that. That's good to know.
Yeah. Hopefully he can make it out and join us and hang out with the whole NMI crew. I know it's last minute, but
I don't know if I can. It's first of all, it's my birthday. I know we have something planned with my family. I already said that. And there's just so much going on now in developing where we have a little like homestead where we farm with animals and plants, and it might be a lot to leave right now.
Yeah. Understandable. And that's actually a perfect segue into you used to live in Canada and now you moved. So what prompted that move? Talk about that a little bit. And I know we could talk about this for a whole other podcast episode, but
briefly. It's a sad story. I hate to say it. Mm-hmm. Canada, it has become a totalitarian regime. There's no democratic process. You know, the whole idea of democracy is a little misleading too, but that's another topic that we won't get into. But we were concerned for the well-being of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And medical tyranny, medical kidnapping, they've gone absolutely insane. And Canadians are fighting. I mean, you saw that whole truck convoy thing that Trudeau treated as a bunch of criminals. They were peaceful protesters. You see the response of the government. They seized millions of dollars that were raised, voluntarily given to these truckers for this very intention to support them. They illegally seized those assets. You could just see the government right before our eyes, blatantly, blatantly, illegally killing the Constitution, enforcing a totalitarian regime. And it's not like parts of America aren't doing that as well.
Right.
But in America, you have people who understand their law better. And you have places in different states that love freedom.
Right.
And the Constitution. I know it sounds so silly to have to say this out loud.
I know.
But they actually love the Constitution of the very country they live in, right?
Right, right.
Gosh, it's so absurd to have to say it like that. Whereas there's a lot of people, I grew up, I'm a hippie kind of guy. I'm a lefty. I've always been a lefty. But in the last few years, the left has fallen prey to these insidious designs that are by the government to ultimately remove people's rights, their basic rights as Canadians, as Americans, and in the other countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we left to come to America. We went to a state where people are still valuing it. It's incredible how many people that I've met. You're at the park, the kids are playing. Hey, how you doing? Where are you from? Oh, we're from Missouri or Minnesota, or we're from California or New York. And things are crazy, and they're on the same page. They know what's going on. They could see what's going on. Maybe not all every detail. Neither do I know every detail, but they know something's wrong.
Right.
They know that what's happening is not at what we're being presented. It's the government is lying to us. They know these things. It's amazing how many people I've met in the state of Tennessee that are in the know. I would say 8 out of 10 people are in the know. 2 out of 10 are not, or maybe they're afraid. They know, but they're afraid. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's why we moved, man. We moved to try to create a better life. And it's like night and day. It's night and day there. It, God willing, it stays there as long as possible, that this desire for the takeover of human rights and the freedom for people to determine their own course is taken away. Like, God willing, that that doesn't come, and that the freedom and truth do win in the end, right? Mm-hmm. And Canada doesn't continue to plummet itself into darkness. But that's why we left.
And that was because of all the just medical tyranny, like you said, around COVID. And, I know that's such a big topic, and we could go so many, segues into that. But what are your thoughts in all of that? I know it's kind of past now, thankfully, but what the heck happened there? I mean, obviously, a lot of censorship around the truth, but what's your take on why that happened the way it did?
Well, what we said, we let out with something. So we're talking, we're here to help solidarity, to help people understand well, at least what we're thinking is going on. Maybe that'll inspire them to consider the same.
Right.
So I don't know if you ever saw the movie, I think it was Bronx Tale or something. It's about this, like, anyway, there's these guys, there's this mafia, bunch of mafia guys, and they have these truckers, this biker gang come in, and they kind of get a little threatening, and then they close the door on the biker guys and they go, "There, now yous can't leave." They closed the door on them so they couldn't leave. And that's exactly what would have happened to us had we not left Canada. Mm. The right to travel, which is right in our passport. It says, this is a document that gives you, the Canadian, the right to freedom to travel. But that was denied because of a medical, like our choice to not take the experimental, whatever you want to call it, shot, right?
Right.
So that was taken away, and we saw that coming. And one of the things that, sent a chill from the tip of my toe up to the top of my head was, I read this about a Hungarian Jew's account. It was an account of Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. They said, we thought this and that. I'm going to totally kill this quote, but the essence of it is, when they forced us to wear the star, then we started to get a little worried, mm-hmm. right? So starting to identify, you're vaccinated, you're not vaccinated, start to split society. You have this right, you have this privilege because you've done as the government told you to do. And many people have gone against their good sense in doing that. It's a total compromise.
Yep.
In order to be with their family, to be with grandma. Mm-hmm. Some people have done it to be with grandma. Some have done it to keep their jobs.
Right.
Right. So this is a totalitarian regime that's coming in. It's one arm of an octopus that has many different arms to push people into the direction of totalitarian control by an elite group of people, and that are, we can call them technocrats, we could call them globalists, mm-hmm. we could call them the heads of the different royal families and corporations. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing today is a loss of the division between the political structure and the corporation. The corporation is acting on behalf of the political structure, and also the corporation is influencing the political structure in how it should operate.
Yep.
Policies are being created both ways, which is a nightmarish revolving door situation where a handful of elites get to determine the course of action and course of decision making for the whole world. And that's what I see happening. And as soon as COVID started, because I had been trained, I've been watching David Icke for many years.
Right.
And with conspiracy, I said, this, now they're making their end game move here. COVID is one arm, the manipulation through the global climate change is another. I'm in favor of being environmentally clean and safe and sound 100%. But the manipulation saying, you humans, you can't take care of this world. We're going to do it for you. It's just another way to shame people into feeling bad about being a human, to take away their God-given right to self-determine. This is the basis of the Constitution in the United States and Canada and all the countries. It's like, you have these rights. But they're trying to convince us to not realize those rights and to be cajoled into the relinquishing of what is our rights. Nothing can ever relinquish your right to self-determine unless you give it consent. I had just as you were doing with me, I worked with Dr. Christiane Northrup, you know, the brilliant medical doctor whose wisdom, she's beautiful, a beautiful soul, brilliant, courageous, and very informative. Mm-hmm. We were talking about vampires, oddly enough, and evil, right?
Yep.
A vampire in vampire lore cannot enter into your house unless you invite it. And that metaphor is so important for what's happening today. We people are inviting this into themselves by taking the medicine, the experimental shot, by acquiescing their power. They're inviting that control. It's very important not to do that. Yeah, very important not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like that word conspiracy theorist got thrown around so much these last couple of years, but it's like I posted something online. It was like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a things aren't adding up and it's pretty obvious theorist.
That's
like,
perfect.
It's like, come
on. It's not a conspiracy theory anymore when it's happening plain as day.
Right.
And it shows you how much they have socially engineered people, psychologically manipulated people to completely abandon rational, logical, free thinking, critical thinking, to deny what's happening right in front of their eyes. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. And that's enough to just close the conversation because it's uncomfortable or because you're sharing something that needs to be looked at. It's kind of ugly. It's scary. It's terrible. But it's wonderful and amazing at the same time because it represents something I think we've all been waiting for. You know, in order to heal something, it has to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Has to come out. Mm-hmm. Like if you have this toxic, you know, totally toxic environment in your body, you have to have some kind of a healing crisis. There needs to be some kind of sweating or vomiting or diarrhea, cold, to restore harmony. Detoxification is not a pleasant thing. Mm-hmm. So what's happening in humanity now is in the direction of cure, because the darkness is revealing itself. Darkness and is synonymous kind of like with fungus. It thrives in darkness. If you shed light on fungus, it shrivels up and dies. In these desperate moves that the elite are taking now to try to maintain control on the planet, they're revealing themselves. In revealing themselves, they're putting themselves out to the light, and they cannot survive in the light. They can only operate in the in covert darkness.
Just like so a that's vampire.
Like a vampire. Another good check mark on the importance of the vampire metaphor in this day and age. Wow. Yeah.
Very powerful. Yeah. Well said. And I agree with you. It's forcing people to wake up to what's been going on and kind of shaking them awake of like, oh, maybe I can't trust the CDC and the FDA and pharmaceutical companies like I once did. Maybe, you know, maybe I'll start questioning a little bit, and down the path you go. You know, it's a good thing.
Exactly. Ultimately. It's like that first step might be the most difficult because it involves having to accept that you've been lied to and been manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us, even those that are awake to the degree that we are, have to continuously discern what thoughts that we have and what we identify with and what has been put there because through manipulation. Mm-hmm. No topic is untouched. Yep. We've been indoctrinated since we're little, wee little things, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So every cosmology, every belief, every way that we identify ourselves has to be looked at. Absolutely. And no, a lot of people don't want to do that. But I say, get over that. Just get past the hump, and then you're going to see the lies everywhere. You'll be able to start becoming an expert at spotting the bullshit as soon as it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like in movies. Have you been to the movies lately?
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
The agenda is, it's dripping off of the movies.
Yeah.
I saw probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my whole life a few days ago. Worst in the sense of just sick. It's sick up here. It was everything everywhere all at once. I think it's Marvel Comics that put it out. Yeah. And yes, they do have some beautiful conclusions, which they're going to do, because they're not going to leave you hanging, because then you're going to totally dismiss it. But the agenda is to reprogram people's minds mm-hmm. away from truth. Mm-hmm. And that movie is heavy into that. I even want to start a website on like spotting the agenda in the movie, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And if you look into how involved Hollywood is with all of that dark agenda, yeah. like you talked about, and yeah, it's pretty sick. It is. Yeah. But okay. So I know we have a time restriction here. I know we could go on for a long time on all of these topics, but sure. Kind of wrap it all up. We started in the beginning talking about the naturopathic community, and just kind of maybe for some leaving on a positive note, maybe not, but how would you say is your feeling of the best way that we can unite as a profession, or just as you know, a human race? Like, how do we come to unification here instead of the polar, you know, the separation? How do we unify?
Right. Good question. So I think it's more like, how do we separate the wheat from the chaff, basically? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that it's time to know where you stand, know who you are, and not to waste much time with those in the profession that have been very deeply psychologically manipulated into a kind of a psychosis. Mm-hmm. There's a psychological psychosis that has descended upon the world, and the naturopathic profession is just a microcosm of that. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, don't bother. Let me put it this way. I will never turn my back on someone who comes to me for help. I don't care what their problem is. There is an exception to that is if they're heavily into taking medical drugs, conventional medical drugs, and they don't want to stop seeing their doctor. Then just from my experience, it's not going to work, because that's a total opposition of models there. Mm-hmm. The model of mind body medicine doesn't work with that.
Right.
It's like shooting yourself in the foot and saying, oh, can you fix my wound? And then you shoot yourself in the foot again. Mm-hmm. I'll put some cream on. Okay. Shoot yourself in the, no, it just doesn't, make sense.
Right.
So if anybody came to me from that model and they were seeking help, I would 100% want to help them. But those that are still very heavily identified, it's not that it's too late for them. It's just, I'm not going to help them. I don't want to try to unify with psychosis.
Right.
And I think that this is part of another arm of that octopus of the agenda to erode humanity's heart and soul and mind. They got at the different forms of medicine. Conventional medicine's way in the bag. And now naturopathic medicine is in the bag. Mm-hmm. Where naturopaths are embracing this completely unscientific non-vaccine.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't even bother having arguments. That's what I would recommend. Right. I would just maintain your integrity, do what's true, stand up for what's true, express oneself. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the goal right now is to try to bring these two, you know, sides together, where one is seeing what I think is reality and the other one is seeing, it's like another entirely different perspective, different reality. Mm-hmm. And they don't meet. It's not like, oh, you have your idea and I have my idea and let's all frolic through the woods together. No, it's not that. I think it's like you have your idea and you have been manipulated into seeing that. And you're suffering from a dis-ease of the mind that is like psychosis. Mm-hmm. There's an erosion of critical thinking in your mind.
Right.
And how do you can't reason with someone like that unless they want to and they're looking for help. That's different. Yes. Right. Then yes.
Right.
Right. So I think that the profession must and will to survive, to preserve the roots, split off from the other part of the profession that is, you know, embracing the mainstream narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The mainstream narrative is completely unscientific. It doesn't make any sense. It continuously contradicts itself. It doesn't hold any of its promises. It's like a crazy person. Why would you follow a crazy person? Why would you try to unite a profession that has gone insane, aspects of it? So I think in our profession, we have to stick together, those of us who are in the know, aware of what's going on, and, you know, pray and give lots of love to those who have become lost in this dark agenda, have our doors open to them. But I don't know, maybe you feel inspired to try to do something about that. But that's my advice, to save your energy, mm-hmm. because we need it now. The bombardment is very intense on all levels.
Yeah.
I think we need our energy. We need to unite with like minds and healthy minds now. Mm-hmm. It's important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, you mean it's not scientific to stand 6 feet apart from each other and then be next to each other on the plane. And they said no more masks. And now they said no masks again. It's literally like comedy. It's like, how can you take that seriously?
It's comedy. Or how about no masks, but if you're on the plane and you have a snack, you can pull your mask down and eat your snack. I mean, the inconsistency, not to mention that your mask is made out of your underwear.
Right.
The size of the spacing between fabric and between the layers of fabric is so huge that the minuscule size of whatever pathogen, if there is a pathogen we're trying to block is, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like stopping mosquitoes with one of those tennis court net, the tennis court fences, right? Like those, they're like big links between it. Anyway. Right. Not unscientific. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. No, well said. And I agree with you and really appreciate you for, like I said, for everything you've done and who you are and continue shining the light and, you know, leading the way with all of the things you do. So I appreciate you and thank you so much for your time and I'll see you real soon.
You're so welcome. I appreciate you very much, Adrian. I appreciate you having the courage and having this platform and the people that you're talking with. So the feeling is mutual and I appreciate you and I thank you as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much and we'll see you really soon.
You bet. All right. Thank you.